across the UK on Freeview Channel 730 and on smart devices. This is RNIB Connect Radio.
I'm Ravi Sagir, and a very warm welcome to Blind Notes on RNIB Connect Radio. In this conversation series, I'll be speaking to different musicians each week, exploring their portfolio of work, their own musical loves, inspirations, and what drives them to perform the music they make. I myself have experience of impaired vision as I suffer from keratoconus, and I'm keen to explore how our guests have overcome their visual disabilities to make their own music and achieve their musical goals. Our guest today is a multi-talented gospel singer, drummer, radio show host, recording studio owner, and a talented songwriter as well. He's a multi-Grammy Award winner as part of the much-revered blues and gospel outfit, the Blind Boys of Alabama. Join me for an hour of conversation with the one and only Eric Ricky McKinney. And let's get a little taste of Ricky's music with the Blind Boys of Alabama. People, get ready. Ricky, you've had an incredible career. You've been with the Blind Boys of Alabama for nearly 40 years. How did you come to join the band?
I've been knowing the Blind Boys ever since I was young, and I met Clarence Fountain at a young age. I was about 4 years old. But as time went on, I was traveling with other groups on the road, and I was helping the Blind Boys out from time to time. But Clarence called me, and he asked me, he said, Ricky, do you want to go with us to Australia? And I said, yeah, sounds good to me, Clarence. He didn't really think that I was going to be going because I had my own group that here in the city called the Ricky McKinney Singers, and I was playing for Reverend B.J. Johnson Jr., who was the nephew of the late Thomas Dorsey, who wrote Precious Lord. But I told Clarence I would go overseas with the Blind Boys, and that's where it really got started. I went overseas with the Blind Boys, and here I am today.
Fantastic. Such a young age as well, only sort of 4 years old. But I believe your mum was a professional gospel singer as well. So do you think it was maybe destiny that, you know, you were to sing gospel through, you know, the influence of your mum, Sarah?
Yeah, my mother, Sarah McKinney, she sang with the Jane Martin Singers, and they were a nationally known group also. But she knew Clarence and all the original Blind Boys of Alabama. I never thought that I would be with the Blind Boys, but as fate would have it, I lost my sight in 1975 when I was 23, but I still stayed on the road doing what I was doing and singing gospel music, and I was playing with a group out of Texas for about another 2 years. Fate would have it that Clarence called me, and I was ready, and here I am.
And you've been a member of the Blind Boys of Alabama for a number of years, but am I right in saying you actually don't come from Alabama? You grew up elsewhere, didn't you?
Yeah, I'm out of Atlanta, Georgia. That's my home.
So you've got a bit of a passport to Alabama, but yeah, absolutely. Now, music-wise, you started off as a drummer. What attracted you to play the drums in the first place?
Well, I started when I was young. I was about 12 years old in elementary school, and I would see, you know, bands on television marching and doing things such as that. And that kind of inspired me to do what I was doing. And as I went to high school, I was listening to soul music and rock and roll and Buddy Miles. But the style of Buddy Miles playing and singing, it made me want to even do more. So I started my playing with a drum set. And from there, you know, I had my different bands here in this city. And that's what kind of inspired me, just listening to other people, watching Buddy Miles and Buddy Rich and different ones that were doing what they were doing. And James Brown. James Brown was one of the guys that I really used to sit by the stereo back in that day and play James Brown music. And my mother said, Ricky said, don't you want to go outside? And I said, no, Mom, I'm good. She said, I tell you what, when I start making money, then you don't want me to go outside. So when we started doing a little better and I was playing R&B and stuff, my mother said, Ricky, are you rehearsing today? I said, no, not today.
Well, as a professional, you want to take a little bit of a break now and again as well, don't you? So obviously James Brown, a massive influence, but you went on to join the band The Soul Searchers. How did that come about?
When I was 18 years old, I was playing with a choir here in the city called the Atlanta Community Choir. And we were playing at a place called Maddox Park. And John Boot Carter, who's passed away, he was one of the major guys in the Soul Searchers. He saw me and said, Man, you're great, man. Who are you, man? I said, I'm Ricky McKinney. He said, wait a minute. Is your mother Sarah McKinney? I said, yeah. He said, man, you need to be with us. And that's how I got started.
Brilliant, brilliant. Let's take a spin back to the Soul Searchers LP from 1972, Great Change.
Is there anybody here tonight that's been born again?
Yes, sir.
If you've been born again, you are not the man. He made me stand up some time of holding on.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio with Ravi Sagu and Blind Notes. Our guest on the show today is the one and only Eric Ricky McKinney. Ricky, a bit of spin back there to 1972, Great Change. You cut some great records with the Soul Searchers. How did you enjoy that studio work? What kind of memories does that evoke?
That was the first time I had really been in the studio. It was great to be able to be there and to be a part of, you know, of one of the number one groups in the city. I felt honored, and it was great. It felt good.
Now, your progression into, you know, different bands and obviously in amongst the same scene continued when you became a member of the Gospel Keynotes. What can you tell me about that time?
That was great. When I joined the Gospel Keynotes, I was 20 years old, and they had called here to the city of Atlanta and talked to the major DJ here, who was Edmund Patterson at that time, and he was asking about me. They already knew me from being with the Soul Searchers. And Edmund Patterson called my mother and said, the Gospel Keynotes want to get Ricky to come play drums. And for a while, my mother didn't want to tell me about it because she wasn't sure that what it was going to be a situation. At that time, I had just come out of the hospital, so my vision was impaired, and my mother told me in June about they were trying to get me to go on the road. And I left home going on the Greyhound bus, going to meet the Gospel Keynotes out of Tyler, Texas. And what happened was that I had my drum set on the bus with me, and it got misplaced on the ride to Greensboro, North Carolina. But I came home, got me another drum set, and maybe about a week later. And that's how it all got started. And Willie Johnson and Paul Beasley and all the guys, they welcomed me, and I was glad to be there. We had a great time.
Now, you've touched upon it earlier in this conversation. You suffered from the eye disorder, glaucoma. You were around, I think you said, about 22 when the progression of your sight loss really kicked in. How did a young man in his early 20s react to such a devastating event?
Well, actually, I was 23 years old, and we had just recorded a record. It was called Reach Out, and the hit song on that record was Jesus, You've Been Good to Me. And by me losing my sight at 23 years old, that song itself resonated in my heart. Jesus, You've Been Good to Me. Because I've had an opportunity to do so many things, and my aunt told me one time, she said, Ricky, you know, you're not blind, you just can't see. And so I lost my sight, but I never lost my vision. So that's what it was all about. I stayed with the Gospel Keynotes 2 years after I lost my sight, 3 years, and came home in 1978 and started my group, Ricky McKinney Singers.
And then when the Gospel Keynotes album Destiny came out, you'd obviously lost your sight at this point. How important was music to you at this time? You know, just forging ahead with your life and, you know, music becoming that central, integral part of your career at this point now.
When Destiny came out, it was a great album. It said, what would my destiny be? And then we had a song on there that was, That's My Son Hanging on the Cross. That was a big song for the Gospel Keynotes also. All those songs that we were doing, it made me think about how good God had been and how my direction. See, I'm the kind of person, it's not about what I can't do that makes the difference. It's about what I do. God spoke to my heart, and he told me one time, he said, just because you're not the choice doesn't mean you don't have the ability. So those things in itself kept me going, the Destiny record, with the big record for the keynotes. And we traveled, and people liked what I was doing, and I loved the people, and it we all worked out together. And it was a great group. They stuck by me in. And I stayed there for a while.
A very significant record for you. I think this is a good time to give it a little spin. Let's head back to 1975 and that very record.
This is an RNIB talking book.
Murder Under the Sun, written by Agatha Christie.
Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte.
Enjoy your favourite talking books on RNIB Connect Radio.
The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Start your day with a morning adventure every weekday from 8 a.m.
Black Beauty by Anna Sewell.
A book for the younger listener or young at heart every Saturday at 9 a.m. with a repeat on Sundays at 3 p.m. and Tuesdays at 6 p.m.
Brazil by Michael Palin.
And our usual talking book slot every weekday at 2 p.m. or if you prefer a book at bedtime, it's repeated at 10 p.m. And you'll find many episodes online at rnibconnectradio.org.uk.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio with Ravi Sagu and Blind Notes. Our guest on the show today is the one and only Eric Ricky McKinney. Ricky, in and around this period, just after 78, what was the setup of the Ricky McKinney Singers? Tell me more about this time and this group.
Well, you know, I left the road in 78. I had met a young lady in New York City. Her name was Regina Townsley. And she introduced me to a company that was called the Braille Foundation for Blind Musicians out of New York City. And by her introducing me to them, this guy named Sheldon Fruin, he told me, he said, Ricky, if you ever left the road and went home, I was going to help you to put your group together. Well, I had a younger brother named Chuck, who is still working with me today with the Blind Boys. He was a drummer in school. He said, Ricky, I want to play bass. I said, man, do you really want to play bass? He said, yeah. So my brother Chuck and me and my mama and a guy named Herschel, we started the Ricky McKinney Singers. And with the Ricky McKinney Singers, actually, the crazy part about it, I came home around the 17th of August, around the same time I joined the Gospel Keynotes, and we started the Ricky McKinney Singers. And we were in the studio, and we cut one song. It was called Jordan River, I'm Bound to Cross. Had my oldest brother, Ronnie McKinney, singing the tenor. I was singing middle part. Chuck was singing baritone. My mama was singing lead, and we had some musicians. And we did that Jordan River, I'm Bound to Cross. And September of 1978, the Ricky McKinney Singers were on the radio program called Angelic Sounds of the Ricky McKinney Singers. And that's how it all got started.
A real family bond and experience there. How did you guys all kind of group together with sort of life on the road and in the recording studio? What are some of your best memories from this part of your career?
We had an opportunity to go to one of the best studios in Atlanta because of the Braille Foundation for Blind Musicians. And we went in the studio, and to be able to have my youngest brother and my mama and Hersha and myself, it was a great experience just to be in there doing what I knew I was going to do. When I left the road, I knew that I was an individual and the road didn't make me. I was one of the people to help make the road.
Was there any certain techniques that you employed yourself alongside the Braille Foundation when you were in the recording studio in terms of using it, setting up, playing music, reading music? What was the kind of techniques and procedures that you used in the recording studio at that point?
Well, you know, the first studio we went in, I used my own drums. A lot of people thought it was a miracle that I could come in and set my own drums up and all that. But I had been doing it for so long, and I had my own technique of where I would play drums and my drum sounds. So I knew what I liked. And the drums really, when I was playing drums, it really inspired me to keep on keeping on.
And Ricky, nowadays, gospel music, it's got quite a worldwide following, but back then, how difficult was it to make a living from singing gospel music in that genre?
On the Chitlin' Circuit, it was rough. I mean, you know, we didn't make a lot of money, but we had a lot of love. See, the difference between now and then is that when you join a group back then, you join because you wanted to be a member of that organization. A lot of times today, people they join because of the opportunity of maybe making a name for themselves or to make some money. Back then, we could travel from Atlanta to California in a car, and we never had an argument. We enjoyed each other, and it wasn't about the money, but when the money came, it was good, but it wasn't just about the money. It was about the relationship, and we had a good time. We had a good time.
A real sense of love for the music and love for the people that you work with. It's a really beautiful sort of sense that you're painting there. Is it true that the Atlanta mayor in 1976 declared May the 10th Eric D. McKinney Day in appreciation of your work?
Absolutely correct. What happened was the year was 1975, and the late mayor, Maynard Jackson, proclaimed May 10th to be Ricky McKinney Day in his city. And for several years, we had a celebration for Ricky McKinney's Day here in the city. It was great. And it makes me feel good today to know that that my music and the life I've been trying to live as far as the music industry is concerned makes a difference.
Ricky, well, I've yet to actually visit Atlanta, but I'll tell you one thing. When I do come over, I'm going to bring my producer Nick over as well. I'm going to make sure that we're with you and we're in and around the May the 10th, because I'm sure there'll be some wild celebrations and some great music getting played. So when we make it over to Atlanta, let's hook up and let's definitely go to Atlanta on May the 10th. You up for it?
Yeah, we're getting ready to hopefully we're going to do a little celebration this year because of the pandemic and all that's going on. But maybe in 22, we're going to have a big celebration for Ricky McKinney Day. We're going to pray over it. We're going to look forward to it, and we're going to make it happen.
Fantastic. I think this is a rather fitting point in the program to hear a little something from the Ricky McKinney Singers. This from the LP Here I Am, the title track, Here I Am.
I went down on my knees one night, and I said, Lord, if you use me,
yeah. So Ricky, when you finally joined the Blind Boys of Alabama, what was your initial role with the band?
When I joined the Blind Boys of Alabama, I was the drummer for the Blind Boys of Alabama.
Okay, so did you ever manage them on the tours and stuff like that? Was it simply you just straight went into to playing drums for them?
We had a manager back then. His name was Lamont Blunt, and he was doing most of the management. Clarence knew I had management ability. And then when Lamont Blunt passed away in 1997, I managed the Blind Boys for 3 years. And in 2000, I heard about a guy by the name of Charles Drebe. Interviewed him, and I brought him on as the manager for the Blind Boys. But I'm still the business manager for the Blind Boys of Alabama.
So when you were, you had that role of, being a bit of a tour manager there, alongside obviously performing as well, were you a bit more strict with your band members? Were you, towing the line a bit harder?
Yeah, well, Clarence was a manager. Some people say he was a dictator, but he was a manager. Clarence would let you know that nobody was bigger than the group. That's the way I feel. and nobody is bigger than the group. It's a group. And he would, they told him, he got mad one time, and that he said, I can take four guys from anywhere and do what I'm doing. Take four blind guys. And he meant that. But the blind boys, you have to be able to, if you're going to be a manager of a band, you have to be able to stand your ground and mean what you say and say what you mean. It's not about who you are, what position you hold. I mean, you got to just stand your ground, you know. Now, I'm the manager for the Blind Boys, and Jimmy Carter is the group leader. So we have to learn to agree to disagree. But when Clarence was the manager of the Blind Boys, he was the group leader, the manager, the music director. He did it all.
And do you think that's been a true testament to the Blind Boys of Alabama, that it's this long-standing institution now that nobody has been bigger than the Blind Boys of Alabama?
Well, you know, I think what has kept the Blind Boys together this long is the love of the music and the respect for one another. We've had some singers even now that are renowned singers, but when they were the Blind Boys, they're the Blind Boys of Alabama, because that's what's important. No matter what I've done in the past, to, if you don't have a past, you don't have a future, but then, that's who I am. I'm the member of the Blind Boys of Alabama, and that's what's important. As long as you remember, if you're in a group, if you want to be a solo singer, be a solo singer. But if you're going to be a member of a group, you have to know that it's a group, and that's what keeps us together.
And Ricky, what was it like, you know, all of a sudden playing in a band where all the band members were visually impaired? What kind of challenges did that bring as a musician, as a performer, and with your fellow bandmates as well?
Well, we never really had any real problems. Clarence and Jimmy and George, they were the three main members of the Blind Boys. They all went to school together. There were a lot of things that I could do that I taught them to do. I taught Jimmy a lot of things about, you know, putting bags together and you know, because a lot of times people will, not purposely, but sometimes people, when you do have a disability, they can turn your disability into a handicap because they want to do a lot of things for you, and it's good, but it's better to be able to do something for yourself. So our main thing is to let people know that a disability doesn't have to be a handicap, because a disability is just a limitation, and everybody has limitations.
Ricky, given the group's repertoire has over 100 songs, how do you all remember the words? How many of the group can read Braille?
It's not easy. It's not easy. Like now, we don't respect and grab as many songs as we used to when Clarence was here. But when Clarence was here, he might recall anything. I mean, like a lot of times people say, Clarence, so you need a sentence. He said, I tell you what, you write them down as I sing them, and then you'll have a set list. And sometimes he put a rabbit out of the hat. He might sing a song that we haven't sung in a long time. But by knowing the Blind Boys, I've been knowing them all my life, I knew most of the songs that they were going to sing.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Ricky, I'm going to play the Blind Boys version of Amazing Grace, which has a bit of an unusual arrangement. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, we were in Los Angeles, California, and we had a producer by the name of John Sulu. He came to us and he said, I got an idea, man. And he said, I want to take the theme of the house, the rising sun, and put it to Amazing Grace. And Clarence said, oh, no, man, we can't do that, man. We can't take Amazing Grace and put a tune under the house of rising sun. He said, man, y'all can sing anything, man. You can make anything sound good. Clarence said, No. So I pulled Clarence to the side. I said, look, Clarence, check it out, man. Let's just try it, man. Let's try it. He said, I'll tell you what, Ricky. I'm going to try it. I don't like it, but I'm going to try it. He tried it, and it was a hit.
Was everyone in the band up for this new working of a traditional classic?
it didn't matter what they thought. It was Clarence. but whatever Clarence said, they followed Clarence because they respected Clarence and they knew he was going to do what was best for the group. So, yeah. At first, nobody liked it. I spoke to Clarence. Clarence came back and he talked to them and said, hey, man, George, Jimmy, come here. Let's do this song. And he tried it and it worked.
Once Clarence has spoken, eh? Let's hear the Blind Boys of Alabama and their take on Amazing Grace.
Let me come home, let me come home, Lord, let me come home.
Ricky, the Blind Boys of Alabama have successfully sung gospel music for 70 years. What is the power for you of performing that music? What does it resonate inside you in your heart?
You know, the Blind Boys have been singing for a long time. We sung in the black circuit. Then we crossed over to mainstream. We don't come to preach to people, but the main thing that I know within myself is the Bible said, if I be lifted up, I'll draw all men. And we've been all over the world, and people still like the music of the Blind Boys of Alabama.
And to what degree is the Blind Boys of Alabama more than just a music band, more than just gospel? There's a huge community there as well, isn't there?
Yeah, the Blind Boys, we are not only a music group. We like to invest in different things. My thing today is that I want to do more motivational speaking. In a few years back, the History Makers came down and they did an article on me that can be seen in the Library of Congress. And they talked about not only the singing, but the motivational speaking. I had spoken at some schools and different places. And that's what the ball about. The Blind Boys, we try to reach out not only just through our singing, but we try to reach out in any way we can.
And Ricky, in 2016, you did a tribute album to the blues musician Blind Willie Johnson. That must have been a very important recording for you guys to do.
Yeah, on that recording, actually, the late Billy Bowers, he was on there, and he was one in 1968 when Clarence left the Blind Boys to go solo. Billy Bowers, he came in as the lead singer for the Blind Boys, and he was there from 68 until 84 when Clarence came back. So that was a good record, and had Billy Bowers singing and Jimmy Carter and the rest of the Blind Boys, George, Jimmy, and all of us. It was good.
And Ricky, have you had to get that shelf reinforced for all the Grammy Awards that you've got? I mean, that must be a very satisfying thing to know that the band have got so much recognition over the years and all those Grammys, you know, that's quite a big feat.
Anytime that you can be appreciated by other people who do music, that means a whole lot. And we are so grateful and thankful that the music industry thought enough of the Blind Boys to award us the Grammys. And then what really stands out with me, see, I'm a different kind of guy. I love the Blind Boys of Alabama and what they stand for. And anytime you can see a black, blind group quartet that is get the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Grammy Association, that was one of the most proudest things that I can remember. Johnny Fields, he was there. Clarence Fountain, George had passed away. Jimmy was there, I was there. Joy was there. I mean, it made me feel real proud just to know that the Blind Boys of Alabama were showing the world that it's not about what you can't do. It's what about what you do that makes the difference.
Such an important message, Ricky. Such an important message. You've branched away from pure gospel on occasions as well, like when you did the country-flavoured album, Take the High Roads. How did you enjoy this experience in this sort of genre?
So it was a great thing to go in and work with the Oakwoods Boys and Willie Nelson and just all the people that we worked with. It was wonderful to be able to just reach out and work with people from different genres.
Ricky, you've also collaborated with a host of artists from Taj Mahal to Toots Hibbert to Bonnie Raitt. What collaboration have you enjoyed the most over the years, do you think?
I enjoyed all of them. When the Spell is Broken with Bonnie Raitt, that was a great record. We did that record. And the one, you know, we've done so many, Randy Travis and just different ones, but anytime anybody asks us to do something, I'm glad to know that they want the Blind Boys to come in and be a part of it. So we're thankful and grateful to everybody, because my mother used to say this all the time, and I'm going to really say it to you. We're glad to know that people need people, and working together works.
Especially this past year, Ricky, some very fitting and beautiful words there. Tell me about your organization, Traditions Cultural Arts, Inc.
Traditions Cultural Arts is an organization that is designed to educate, promote, and preserve music. Not just gospel music, but music. And I want to just go into the schools and talk about traditional music and what it stands for. A lot of times people have they forget about how important traditional music is. We're going to do a scholarship fund, and we're going to put on some concerts doing different things, blues and gospel and folk music. And so that's what it's all about. It's designed to Our goal is to educate, promote, and preserve music.
And Ricky, it's been quite a life journey you've been on. To what degree has your faith seen you through all these ups and downs and all these joyous occasions as well?
Well, you know, my thing is that I have always been a dreamer. And if you can dream the dream, do the work, and keep the faith, it works out for you. And when you talk about Ricky McKinney and what I'm all about, a lot of times people might not see things the way that I see things, but and time has passed. But I believe in what I do. I believe in God. He has always been there. It hasn't been about me. My faith has always taken me from one place to another. You played my record about Here I Am. That was the first recording that we ever done. And the first thing I said on that record, I said, if you use me, I'll go anywhere you want me to go. And I'll do anything you want me to do. And I said, and all I had to say to him was, here I am. And that's where I'm at today. Here I am.
Eric Ricky McKinney, it's been an absolute honour and pleasure to have you on Blind Notes on RNIB Connect Radio. Many, many thanks for joining us today. And, well, a rather fitting track once again to see us out today. This is Blind Boys of Alabama, Oh Lord, Stand By Me. Thank you, Ricky.
Thank you. Good to be here. And just want to say to all your listeners, no matter what your situation may be, no matter what you're going through, just know that there is a light beyond the tunnel, and it's shining just for you.
From RNIB, the UK's leading sight loss charity, this is RNIB Connect Radio.
You've been listening to Blind Notes with me, Ravi Sagu, which is a Demos production supported by the Audio Content Fund for RNIB Connect Radio.
When the storm lies raging, stand by me.